Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You can't win anything with kids.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
How much are the players looking forward to Arsene Wenger arriving?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Phoenix Five, Season 2. We had a little break and left you with some fantastic interviews. Hopefully you enjoyed those. Robbie Musto, Raw Fox and Phil Brown. We've been busy creating some new content. We have some more absolutely amazing interviews recorded and they will be released. We're not too sure yet if it'll be partway through or at the end of the season. So this season we've had a chat and as a group we've decided that, you know, as much as we want to cover the 90s, we do want to dip our toe in to the noughties. So we'll be covering other episodes such as player versus player, a look back at the FA Cup, another look at an England tournament, the Golden Generation, Champions League of the noughties, and again in the 90s. And we will be introducing our first two members into the Phoenix High Hall of Fame and much more. On this week's show, we'll be kicking things off just like season one with more things that we missed from the 90s and the noughties. So underdogs like Greece and Porto, Real Madrid's Galacticos, Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Rivaldo, kits still being massive and the start of money coming into football. We're going to start off with the birth of the golden era. So Miller, what is it you miss or remember about the golden era?
The golden era to the late 90s going into the noughties and the England squad at the time, what we had after the 98 going into 2002, I thought that was our best opportunity. I know the press and everyone hyped them up way too much, but that team, if they was managed correctly and the tactics put onto them with the right formation, we could have went really far with that team and that squad, like Spain did, like France did. They got a good core, 15, 16 players and kept them and used them well. But the golden generation, whatever the media called it, yeah, it was, that was the biggest letdown for me of quality of players, of how they was managed.
Do you think under a better manager, they would have gone on to win something then?
Yeah, better manager, better tactics.
Okay, who? What manager would you have put in at the time, would you say?
I thought Hoddle, as I said on one previously, after 98, I think Hoddle's with his tactics, he was ahead of the game. With that bunch, that golden generation, he would have definitely have taken us further.
The problem is, I don't think
Sven had enough about him tactically.
I don't know, that's a hard one because I think he was quite... So you think he was looked at as a foreign coach tactically because he was foreign? So therefore, he must have been tactically better than what we had in the country at the time? Because obviously, with the influx of foreign managers in 2000s, when we started to really get the big managers coming over.
I wouldn't say his main thing for me was he picked people by name, not by whether they was on form. Hoddle for me would have dropped star players like he done in 98 with Gazza, how he treated Beckham and stuff like that. I reckon he would have cut players for the benefit of the team when Sven and people like that and Keegan, they were picking players by names of who they are in the Premier League and stuff like that.
Graham, would you agree with that?
Yes, I do, 100%. Exactly what Miller's saying. The word golden generation, I think, doesn't just include England. It includes a lot of clubs around the world, national sides around the world. They have a certain amount of players that are good at that stage, and then they've gelled together and then become the golden generation. No, I agree 100%. I think the word golden generation for England is hype. I think there were 11 players that were great and world-class at the time for their clubs. Put them together, didn't gel well enough. Then I don't think they got to a semi, let alone a final. Miller's bang on with the Sven thing. The tactics didn't work. But as well, I think when you get down to it, and when you look at the tournaments, European Championships and World Cups, you've got the likes of Italy, you've got the likes of Brazil, you've got the likes of Holland, Germany. At the end of the day, I know it's a knockout tournament, but they're just better than us at the end of the day. I don't know how else you can sum it up. Over 90 minutes, over extra time, I can't remember the stats, penalties, etc. We didn't do enough as an 11, as a unit. And that's why we didn't win anything, you know. Individually, I think there were fantastic players. Like I say, you know, I don't know, top of my head, Gerrard, Scholes, Lampard, world-class, fantastic players. But as a unit, weren't good enough. Before we go on to Dave, you know, when we done the World Cup 98 one, I mentioned Romania, and I was laughed at. But at that time, it was their part of their, 98 was part of their golden generation. That's why they were a good unit. They weren't all world-class players, but they gel well as a team, you know. They didn't get the semi-finals and finals either. So, yeah, I think the word golden generation was hype. Individual players weren't hype. They were that good. But as Miller said, under Sven, I agree with him, under a better manager, i.e. Hoddle, maybe somebody else, they would have done better. Yeah, yeah, I think you're spot on, mate.
Paul, could you think of another manager that could have taken the English golden generation any further than what Sven did?
I'm going to repeat what I've said in the past, and I think with you guys, I think Glenn Hoddle was sacked too early. I think, again, I don't know about the tactical side of things. I get the name. I understand and agree with the names in terms of picking names and shoehorning players in onto different positions so they were in a team. The golden generation, as we like to call it, that 11 was the best. I think you could argue that was the best England 11 that we have seen in our lifetime, definitely.
But you even go onto the bench, though. I know you say 11.
Yeah, yeah.
You go onto the bench. Any one of them could have come into the starting lineup.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I think it coincided, unfortunately for England at the time, that Brazil had somewhat of a golden generation. France had somewhat of a golden generation. And Brazil had somewhat of a golden generation. So if you put that England team in international football now, and this current World Cup and European Cup, I think we go on to win a double. I think we win a World Cup and a European Cup championship, no matter who the manager is personally. I think they were that good ahead of what we've got now. At that time, you had Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, Rivaldo at Brazil. You had Henri, Vieira, Petit at France. It was difficult, very, very unfortunate. Spain dominated for a long period of time. No, I don't know if there is another manager I would have come in at that time. I didn't think so. I can't remember it on the top of my head. And I will look at it when we do the tournament England in a later episode. I will look to see who was linked to that job, because I think you'll find there was a lot of disappointment when Sven was appointed, because it was the first non-English manager. And I think a lot of people wanted to go against that. But going on, just keying into slightly, as you said, what Graham said about Romania's golden generation, there was someone that had a golden generation, and that was Greece in the 2004 Euro Championship.
Yeah.
And Holland, you remember that tournament?
The worst Euros ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember it. And they scored about 5 goals in the whole
worse
tournament.
Worse than 92, Miller?
Yeah, worse than 92.
Really?
Yeah.
That it must have been bad then.
But that showed the time of Greece coming in. I mean, it was a very, very, you know, you could say poor, but at the same time, it's a knockout competition. An underdog won it. It wasn't seen to be, you know, well, they weren't favourites going into the tournament, but they just did what they had to do very well and was organised. And in the same period, in the same year, Porto won the Champions League, you know. So underdogs in 2004 were massive. It's just interesting, I think, if you find the reflection of golden generations, golden eras.
Can I just jump in about this? I've got a problem with that being called golden generation, because it gives a false pretense that there was some success there. The only thing that England have got going on for themselves at that time was that on paper the team looked great, but nothing else.
And that's where it's the old media.
Yeah,
made
and if I was part of that, I wouldn't want to be called the golden generation, because what did we win?
And it put too much pressure on them to do something.
It's just a load of they like you said, they shoehorned Scholes to the left just so Scholes didn't get left out of the team. Mm. And that's ridiculous. Like, you see that midfield, it was Lampard, Gerrard and Scholes, which would have been great in a formation now if you could have had them playing central, one a little bit further up, whatever, you know, one sitting deep. And then you've got your two wingers, no one would say forwards now. Yeah, so and you've got that. So the formation now, yeah, it would have been great. But like you say, it was all just to please people by picking certain players just because who they were. So yeah, I've got a problem with it being called the golden generation. I think that's a load of bollocks.
Like, you'd have players that were on form for their club in the Premier League and even probably turning up to the England squads thinking, I ain't even going to get a chance here. I'm turning up and I'm literally making the numbers up for training just because you knew who Sven was going to pick.
I do agree. I think what we'll move on, because I think when we do the England tournament in a couple of weeks' time, I think we'll come back and we'll delve a bit deeper into the golden generation, because I think it's a fascinating period.
I'll call it that.
Sorry.
It's going to be off.
The England generation of greatness, maybe. So obviously, we've covered the 90s quite a bit in the last season. The 90s or the 2000s, what was the better era for you? Obviously, I think you're going to say the 90s, but...
Going on to about 2005, I was still living in London then, so I was still going to Fulham home and away. I was still following football, then boxing took over, etc. But the period we're carrying into now, the 2000s to 2010, I was still, you know, knowledgeable about it. No, if you're talking about what's my favourite, it's going to be the 90s, 100%. It's the era I was a child in. It's the era that drew me to football. It was the era I was passionate about football. And I loved the 90s. We all grew up together. We all played football every day at school. We all bought match and shoot magazines, sticker books. At that time, we've all got children now. I mean, Dave's obviously, Hollins is a bit older than us and he's doing the sticker book now. So at that period, when you were a child, probably from about the age of 10 to 15, 16, football's your life, you know. You've got no other worries in the world. You know, now we're adults. We're looking at work, family, money, etc. It's football, football, football. So, yes, 90s is my period when I look back and love the game, mate. Yes, it is, yeah.
Miller?
Noughties for me. Purely because I was older and I was watching football in a different way. More from a tactical side of it and appreciating how teams were playing and the levels of skill that's on show by players. In the 90s, young at school, it was just Sky bringing in the Premier League, on watching like night games and stuff like that down QPR. It was more of the atmosphere and the excitement of it. But noughties for me, the quality of player on show in the noughties for me was better than the 90s. And that may be a bit harsh to say about some of the 90s players who were very good.
It's real. We're not going to get no guests on now you said that.
I just think the talent and the training that was brought in with the foreign players coming in into the mid to late 90s improved the Premier League in the early noughties going through. Like, look what after Man United, 99 was it, Champions League. Then Liverpool went on to do it. Chelsea went on to do it. Arsenal failed to do it. Sorry, Holland.
That's a dig, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, blimey.
Fulham nearly did it. Fulham nearly did it in UEFA Cup.
UEFA, Middlesbrough done it. So, like, in the early noughties, the quality of football was a lot better than the mid-90s, I'd say.
Holland, would you agree? Are you 90s or noughties?
I like both. And I like football all over, really. There's no really era for me because it just in the noughties it was just an excuse to go to the pub and watch football, where I couldn't do that in the 90s. So not that I needed an excuse to go to the pub in the noughties, because it was just standard from Thursday to Sunday. But it was nice to be able to go in there and watch football. So, you know, I agree with what Willis says. I think the standard of football improved in the noughties compared to the 90s, I believe. I would say that the better football was played in the noughties, but I like both. You know, like Euro 96, that's for me, you know, I said that before, I loved that, and that was in the 90s. So there's pros and cons to it all, but I've got three moments in the noughties that I remember that I love. One was England 5-1 with Germany. I could watch that all day, every day. Beckham's free kick against Greece to put us through. and the Invincibles, but we've gone on about the Invincibles before, so I don't want to go on about it. But they're my three moments that just spring to mind when I think of the noughties. And
the 5-1 you mentioned there, I think what I read, that was the start of the media hype of Golden Generation, wasn't it? After that 5-1 hammering of Germany. I think that's where it all started, wasn't it?
This episode, I was kind of thinking about it, because I knew it was one of the questions I was going to ask. I'm with every, it's a very mixed one. I think Graham, obviously, what he was saying, I completely get in terms of it was free-flowing in your youth, just being able to do football and enjoy it for what you could participate with. But for me, as Miller said, you start seeing it through different eyes. And obviously, we're going to coaching. I really felt in depth, and you get behind the scenes of it, and then all of a sudden, the way you see games and you sit in the stand and you're watching things and you're anticipating runs. When you're in the 90s, I couldn't do that, so because I didn't understand it at that level. I think the football accessibility in the 2000s to 2010 was growing, so you could consume it a lot more. Whereas before, I mentioned in the intro about surprises in football, where you used to have someone rock up and it was a massive surprise when they signed for the club by checking teletext. Whereas now it's 24/7, and you get that in the mid to late 2000s. What about Mourinho coming in when the special one walks in? We all remember that, surely. He came in, obviously, Abramovich comes in, flies over in the helicopter, was about to buy Spurs, got turned down, and then said, right, I'll go and buy them instead, and picks up Stamford Bridge from Ken Bates.
I remember that, Paul, in the Evening Standard.
Yeah.
I remember that from the Evening Standard, that. It's on the back page of the Standard. Abramovich in the helicopter, wouldn't it?
Leave off. You never read the Evening Standard. You read the Sport. That's it.
That was a Sport, Dave, obviously. Oh, you mean the Daily Sport?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll rephrase that. I bought the Daily Sport, my dad bought the Standard. It's a notice the back page. Paul's right. Apparently, he came over to buy Spurs, didn't he? And they refused, and he went over in the helicopter, and he saw Stamford Bridge below. From what I remember, he said, whose ground's that? It's the old Chelsea. And he said something like, I'll have them instead. And then the story went from there, Paul. Am I right?
That's spot on. That again, I think, was the turning point. I think the Chelsea coming in, buying up leagues, so to speak. And that was the first club. You talk about Man United, Dave, but Chelsea were the first club to buy the league. They came in investing Crespo, I think Damien Duff.
Hang on. I've got a minute.
You didn't do that in the 90s, no?
Yeah, with a straight face.
What do you mean?
You seriously, as a Man United fan, trying to tell me that Chelsea were the first team to buy the league?
100%. Blackburn, maybe I could say. Blackburn were the first team.
And Man United, I know we've had this argument before, so you are standing by it that Man United never bought a league, no?
No. No, I was still at.
Oh, my days. Okay, you carry on.
Oh, my days.
I can't have this attack. Hold on, just very quickly.
Dave, back your argument up. Go on. That's what he's waiting for.
We went over this.
Paul is right about Blackburn. They were the first side to throw X amount of millions in one season to buy it. But, am I right, Paul?
I said this before. Every team ever, other than Arsenal, every team ever challenged Man United, they challenged them with money.
What do you mean, Arsenal? I'm not having this. No. We said this.
Who said correct?
Arsenal. Wenger spent bucket loads of money when he was competing against Ferguson. We brought youth in constantly. We brought our own players in for the academy constantly.
You've done it once in '92. That was it.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Does anyone want to disagree with Dave? Because I don't want to just be the only person that's
Dave means all in one. They brought him in all together. Whereas Paul, you're probably saying they brought him in bits and bobs.
Yeah.
Is that what you're both saying, Dave?
91, 92? Yeah, I am. I mean, what do they call them? That's another
class of 92.
Oh, class of 92. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
They're the ones.
That's not buying a league, is it?
Rooney come through the youth. You know what I mean?
No. Everton.
Exactly. That's what they do.
It's called signing players, you mug. What's wrong with you?
Oh, God. But Man United have done that more than anyone else for British transfer record fees most years.
But just spending the money on one player doesn't mean that they're throwing money.
Yeah, but that's what Man United could do. The minute Man United did win a league, they just go and buy a big signing.
But we self-created ourselves. Man United created their own wealth. Blackburn was...
Because
Blackburn was Walker throwing money at the situation.
Yeah, there you go.
Under the Man United...
You just said what I said.
Creating their own wealth. And anyway, we'll move on because we all know that.
All right, so I win. You've proven
about everything that you was proven that you was wrong, and the stats back that up. But going on to Chelsea. So obviously in 2004, as I said, after five, then Jose comes in. Championship manager becomes real life. It was literally go and look at a player, I'll sign him. Look at a player, I'll go and sign him. So it was just quite enjoyable in the 2000s. I think it's got bigger and bigger now with Man City and other clubs coming to do it. But that links on nicely to Galacticos. Who remembers that period?
Madrid's Galacticos era in the beginning of the century can be a controversial topic. Was it a story of success in transforming a club into a global brand? Or was it a story of failure in how to build a balanced team to compete on the field? Did the business ambitions exceed the footballing goals? The story of how Zidane signed for Madrid started in the Euro Gala in August of 2000. As Perez passed a simple question on a napkin for Zidane, would you like to play for Real Madrid? Zidane passed back his reply on the napkin, which said, yes. Ex-assistant of Alex Ferguson, Carlos Queiroz, took over managing duties, as Perez justified this decision by saying he wanted a more tactically astute manager. And David Beckham was introduced as the newest Galactico, as this transfer proved that Florentino's intentions were purely driven by commercial goals. While titles have been absent in the last 3 years, and many managers and directors have been recycled, Florentino Perez succeeded in his initial plan, which is to turn Real Madrid into a commercial and profitable machine. Based on Deloitte's report on the richest clubs in the world, Madrid claimed the top spot in the 2004-2005 season, and despite not winning any titles, Madrid kept their position through to the president's resignation in February of 2006.
Yeah, unbelievable. That's why I was going to bring it up earlier about the noughties being the best generation, is the quality on show in the Champions League and how far the British teams were going in there, even Celtic as well at the time. But yeah, the Galacticos were special. But I'd go the squad just before the Galacticos would have beat them on paper as a team at Real Madrid. Like when Steve McManaman and them guys were there. I reckon that team would have beat the Ronaldo team.
Well, the Galacticos coming in was really interesting because it was like their philosophy was a superstar sign every year. And it was literally the best player in the world. They would go and sign, no matter the fees, they would go in. I mean, getting Figo from Barcelona, Zinedine Zidane, David Beckham, unbelievable. And again, it was, and watching them was just a joy to watch in that period. Graham, do you remember much about that period?
I thought, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, I might be completely wrong. I thought Galacticos were British players. Was that not the thing?
No. It was it was the era of the Galacticos.
Okay. Yeah, I do remember it. I just had the impression it was all English players. I don't know. Don't get me wrong. McManaman was good at Liverpool. He got better at Real Madrid, but I'm surprised he went there. To be honest, McManaman, he's not a player. He's sort of not even cherry picked to go to Real Madrid, is it, at the time? Because he was good, but he wasn't great.
Wasn't he a free transfer?
Say again, sorry.
Didn't he go on a free transfer, McManaman?
Yeah. I've no idea. I remember him going to Real Madrid, but I wouldn't have thought at that time he was good enough to play for them. Obviously, he was. He scored in the Champions League final, didn't he? If I remember rightly.
When we do the fantastic 2000, I think he might have a good shout because I think he's a very underrated player. And
I'll tell you another brilliant player that went there, Jonathan Woodgate. Remember him? He scored another goal and got sent off on his debut.
On his debut, very good player though.
He was a good player. He just it didn't work. You know, it's just some things just don't work out, and that just didn't work out for him.
Same as Mike Owen, didn't work out for him there.
But if you look at Michael Owen's games to goals ratio in when he was there, it ain't bad, and he was a sub most of the time.
What about football shirts of the 90s? Because you still had, obviously, in the noughties, if you go back and look at them, you still had the famous massive football shirts.
I love them, Paul. I love
them. Come on, Graham. This is your speciality.
I'm a massive fan of football shirts. I'd say from about when we was at school until now, I'd say I've had about over 1,000 football shirts of different clubs, countries, non-league. So, I mean, I've got one on now. It's an Adidas Equipment original. It's an early 90s German amateur club. I don't even know who they are. I've just collected. I love them. I think, guys, I mean, if you look at the football shirts now, have you noticed how sort of, I mean, we're like in our late 30s and now obviously we get a bit bigger, we fill out and whatnot. They're all like very slim, tight, and the sponsors on them are all Chinese betting companies. Whereas in the 90s, they were very baggy, and you had a lot of local sponsors, didn't you?
Sponsors,
you know. Yeah. I mean, top of your head, I mean, you had, I'm thinking now, Draper Tool, Southampton. You had Classic FM, QPR. You had Dickens for Middlesbrough. I find a very, even though I'm not football mad 2021, I think I find the kits quite boring now, very samey. I think the football kits had a lot of character then. Don't you agree, or do you disagree, lads?
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that. And especially the colours, because that obviously what turns Harper on, the goalkeeper's coloured shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a great player because he wore a pink shirt. Yeah, but no, I agree with what Graham, no one can talk about it better than him.
The designs are very samey now, aren't they? They're very cataloguey. Whereas back in the 90s, they were very unique. As everyone had their own sort of... I know you had the Adidas... Look at USA 94. A lot of the teams had very similar stripes and whatnot. But when you look at the Premier League, there was a lot of different... I don't know. I think kits have changed a lot. It's hard to explain, you know, off the cuff without doing any research on it. They're just very different. I think everyone looks the same now. They're very tight-fitting. The Chinese sponsorship. I just think everyone looks the same. You know, whatever colour you are, the kit suppliers are the same. It's either Adidas, Nike or Puma, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where you look back years ago, QPR had Clubhouse, didn't they? You had Hummel.
Kappa.
Help me out, guy. I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Was it Kappa?
Kappa. Everyone had very different, but it's very similar now. Everyone's got more or less the same.
I think you remember as well, the kits as well. You used to get 2 years out of a kit. You know, like the home kit, you'd have it and you know it'd be it for next season. You get, know what I mean? So it's still, they're changing the kits every single season now, 3 kits a year. Bosh. And do you know what I mean? It's all like, you get, like, you like to go on the
court, money, isn't it?
It's all money. It's all
money, good. Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Alfie, to get Alfie a full kit, it's about a oneer. And now, that's ridiculous.
The rip off, Dave, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dream Team. Did anyone watch Dream Team on Sky One after Simpsons on a Sunday night?
Yeah, loved it, mate.
The bird in it was, well, it was the one that the bird that was, she's in Corrie now. She was a care lady, wasn't it?
Linda. I think her name was Linda, wasn't it?
Yeah. Dream Team was decent. Yeah, it was. Fucking stupid, but it was good.
And what was the guy in it? Carl something. Is the striker?
Fletcher.
Fletcher,
yeah.
That's it, yeah. Renford Rejects. Anyone watch that?
No.
I remember that on Nickelodeon.
I remember Footballers' Wives. Remember that one with ITV? Yeah. That was another stinker.
And then you had, obviously, Soccer AM, which was still now going, when that was the first launch of catalogue football TV.
It's not the same since it was old Lovejoy and Chamberlain. It's never been the same since without them.
No, the minute he left, it was over. No, but like the Champions League then, in the noughties, early noughties, when that music comes on, and you know it's going, especially a midweek game, when like under the light, say like at Old Trafford or Anfield, pissing down with rain under the lights against, say, Real Madrid or Barcelona, whoever. Them games for me were just class. Say from 2003 to 2005, was it? Chelsea, Liverpool, semi-finals, a couple of years on the bounce. I was in Frankfurt watching one of those semi-finals and it was blinding. I was in an Irish bar next to the Central Station. Absolute atmosphere in there was ridiculous. But yeah, I miss Champions League football from the noughties. I don't like watching it now. It's all samey. Knockout. You know who's going to get through. You can literally have a bet of the teams that are going to get into the quarterfinals. But back then, it was exciting. You never knew. Everybody had a chance of winning it back in the early noughties.
Well, Porto's an example of that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Or Bayern Leverkusen.
In the past, the Champions League in the 90s, noughties.
Well, yeah, I've done a bit of a rant, didn't I, in the SPL episode. Yeah, you know my feelings about that. I haven't got anything against any of the teams. It's just the format. I agree with Miller. He's on about the 2000s, so I can go back even earlier. It's the music at the start. Mm. You've got to remember... the likes of us, it didn't... Well, it wasn't on Sky, though, was it? So I'm going to say the likes of didn't have Sky, but Champions League wasn't on Sky. It was on ITV. So watching a midweek game on a Wednesday night, Tuesday night, it was a draw, wasn't it? It was excitement. Likes of myself, I think you guys had cable and Sky on a Sunday. The excitement of me looking forward to a football Italian on a Sunday, it was one live game a week. You know, being a football fanatic, as I said, in the 90s, I enjoyed that. That's why when we go back to the 90s, I always go back to Football Italia. was his only game live I saw once a week, and I loved it. But going back to the Champions League, yeah, I'm with Miller. This day and age, I mean, I think off the top of my head, I don't really follow it as much now, as you all well know. But I'd probably want PSG to win it because they're the only winners of their domestic league. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not sure. But yeah, no, I'm not a fan of the format, like I've said. Yeah, Champions League 90s, early noughties, the music, under the lights, whether it be Manchester United, Chelsea, whoever. It does give you a tingle, I must admit. It is exciting.
Graham summed it up well. 2006, when Arsenal lost in the Champions League final to Barcelona, that was as close as we have ever come. And it was just heartbreaking because fucking Jens Lehmann got sent off double early in that game. And we had chances to win it, to be fair. But that's a bit, that always obviously hurts because we've never won it. So
did Sol Campbell score in that game?
Yeah.
Loud.
Yeah.
It was disallowed.
Yeah, that just made me think of the 98.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He done the same in 98, done the same. I got disallowed. He ain't never had much luck with them headers.
He steps up and gets poo-pooed on, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We'll come back on the Champions League again. We won the episodes we do in a couple of weeks' time, so we'll delve more into that because that period from, obviously, United was 99, but 99 to 2010 was massively successful for English footballers, I think Miller said, for Champions League and UEFA Cup at that period, but English teams. That was, hence the golden generation for English football in that tournament, because it was always seen as quite poor in Europe until that period. And all of a sudden, we dominated quite consistently. We had, I think, three teams in the quarterfinals for about 5-6 years in a row. FA Cup. We're going to delve into this season a bit more into the FA Cup as well, because we didn't really mention that last season as much as I thought we would have done. The FA Cup to me, and we spoke to a guest last week. Again, we'll be releasing that later on. And he said, as a kid, from another country, the FA Cup, when he was a winner of it, was the greatest achievement of his career. And this guy's won UEFA Cup. He's been in European tournaments. But he stands alone and says the FA Cup. He remembers watching it as a 10-year-old boy, never thinking he'll be able to lift that trophy. And when he did, it meant so much. It's now, obviously, it just doesn't mean as much. The FA Cup in the 90s, any, and I won't use Giggs on this one, on the early 2000s and that goal, but any other memories that you can remember about the FA Cup that you now miss?
I miss the minute. You know, like a few years ago, I couldn't tell you the year. Farnborough drew Arsenal in the third round, at Highbury, I think it was. And they're the fixtures that I like most about the Cup, where, you know, sometimes these minnows, they nick a result. And so I that's what I like about the FA Cup, is when a team that don't have that much money, the FA Cup will help them if they get a fixture at their ground and they get a big team. You know, like that's basic. Once it starts getting, obviously, if my team's in it, you know, but once they start, it starts going further. Like yesterday, Chelsea, Man City, there's loads of people watching it where I was, and I just really wasn't that arsed. You know, like, but. If that was Arsenal Farnborough or Chelsea Farnborough, I would have more likely sat there to watch it and hoped that the team wasn't expected to wins. You know, like I that's the bit I like about the FA Cup.
FA Cup third round, Dave, when your big boys get the minnows, is that what you mean?
Yeah. I like it. You know, when a team, Havant and Waterlooville and all that lot get to the third round and they get a big tie and it helps them out. And you'll find that there'll be a newspaper spread the day before, Sam, and it'll show what jobs they do and their families that in the middle in a double spread page, like one's a plumber, one's a painter, and then he's gonna be playing against David Silva. You know that, all that. I like that bit of it. So for me, that's it.
FA Cup songs, anybody?
Liverpool FC is hard as hell. United, Tottenham, Arsenal. Watch my lips and I will spell. Cause they don't just play, but they can rap as well.
My idea was it to build Liverpool into a bastion of invincibility, you know, like.
I can't remember the Arsenal.
Chelsea have madness. One of theirs doing one of their songs.
Yeah, that was actually, you know what? As much I don't like Chelsea, right? But that madness one for Chelsea, gonna make it a blue. That was decent.
Chelsea, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I quite like that song.
Remember the Arsenal one, Dave? The Hot Stuff, was it?
Yeah.
I remember that one, yeah.
Mr. Fur and Nicholas showing them how. I used to know all the words to that. It was sad.
What's happened to those? They've disappeared, haven't they? It's like you, is it frowned upon or they just don't bother or they don't mean
it? The players are probably thinking that they'd probably be embarrassed to do something like that now.
Yeah, exactly. And why? What's changed?
From a commercial point of view, it's interesting because clubs are so commercially driven now that releasing a song would mean revenue of some sort. Or at least donating some money. I mean, back in the day, it was donated to charity. I think the whole point was they'd done a charity single for the FA Cup. I think, you know, United had one with Come On Your Reds. I do miss it because it was quite innovative and quite funny when you had that song. It's quite cringy now. But I would like to see that back, definitely. The three things the FA Cup, we would all like to see back. FA Cup songs, quarterfinals being played at
semi-finals, you mean?
Semi-finals being played around the grounds.
Neutral, yeah.
And the final of the FA Cup being the last fixture on the calendar.
Road to Wembley, wasn't it, Paul? It was the road to Wembley. It wasn't road to the semi-final at Wembley. It was the road to Wembley.
Yeah.
Tell you what, you know, you mentioned the gigs, the gigs thing, but we spoke about it before. The semi-final at a neutral ground, 50-50 fans, was amazing. Absolute great game. I think they were better than the final sometimes, to be fair.
Yeah, now it's all corporate at the finals, though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And even now, though, the final being played at 5:30 after a Premier League game. No, come on.
Disrespectful, isn't it, Dave?
It is. It's making a mockery of it. Because, the bit like you said, it was a whole day event, like the FA Cup final. You get right into it. You know, they show the route to the final from both teams and you'd have old players coming talking about it. You know, that's just being thrown on at 5:30. And that's disrespectful to it, I think.
Do you think the League Cup, I mean, personally, the League Cup in the 90s and 2000 was a bit of a joke cup. It was the Mickey Mouse Cup. No one really wanted to win it. It wasn't really bothered about. It was for, no disrespect to the clubs, but Leicester's, Middlesbrough's, Aston Villa's, these other clubs that would come and win it. Man United, Liverpool, and that wasn't really competing it that much. They were part of the reserve team a lot of the time. Do you think the League Cup now, obviously we're jumping down the line a bit, is a bigger competition than the FA Cup now?
No. I don't.
No.
If you watch it from when it starts, they're still putting out the second string. So how is it even bigger? They only put their full sides out when they get to the semis. Same as the FA Cup final, because they've got a chance of winning silverware.
But
I disagree.
Hold on. The FA Cup are doing that. Man City made 9 changes yesterday to their game.
That's what I just said.
In the FA Cup, they made.
Oh, okay. In the FA Cup. Well, okay. I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I'm guessing whoever was in the semi-finals of the League Cup didn't have their strongest 11 out either. So I think they're both. I think the FA Cup, the value of it has gone down, but I don't think it's. I think it's equal to the League Cup now, I would say. Villa?
FA Cup, yeah, has to be FA Cup. It still has that value. The Premier League is just a monster. I love the FA Cup and what they're doing with the TV on it and stuff like that. They should just allow, as Graham said, the final to be the only game in the FA Cup. As he said, the road to Wembley. It's just lost its magic. I love it. I love the FA Cup.
Love or loved?
I love it still, especially that the semi-pro teams play it. You go down Warren Farm on a Saturday and they're playing in the FA Cup qualifiers straight away in pre-season. It gives everybody the chance. For say, like, this guy who went to our school, Tony Taggart, to play against Arsenal at Highbury, to play against Liverpool at Anfield, for somebody to get the opportunity from where we live, from our school and stuff like that, to go to those places, that's what dreams are made of. The second team, string teams from the big clubs, that doesn't bother me, really, because the players have got to get playing time. The amount of games that the teams are playing at the top, for them to play the younger players or the second stream, that don't bother me, really, in the FA Cup.
The FA Cup, the League Cup, and Graham, you disagree with me, which is absolutely fine, but I think I've enjoyed, over the last 4 or 5 years, I think I've enjoyed the League Cup competitions more than any one FA Cup match in the last 5 years. I think League Cup, in terms of competitiveness, And obviously, I know this, Man City have won it X amount of times up until the final, I will say, because then it has been boring. But the competition in itself, seeing young players come in and getting a chance now in the League Cup, I've enjoyed. I mean, the League Cup is done so quickly now because it's generally done by February in a normal season. So a lot of the teams still use that and put their players out for it because they can still manage and maintain it. Where the FA Cup, I think, is coming into a busy period of the season, which is January. And then all the way through where it's the business end of the Premier League and the Champions League and the UEFA Cup. So all the big clubs kind of try and rotate. Fourth is now a trophy in a lot of people's eyes. And fourth is, if you ask Arsene Wenger, if you ask Jose Mourinho or anyone, if you can win the FA Cup but finish sixth or fifth, or you can not win the FA Cup and finish fourth, what are managers going to say now? There's one answer. They're all
trophy.
No, who no one says a trophy.
Trophy, it's got to be a trophy.
Let me flip it. Let me do a Miller and flip it.
Yeah, flip it. It has to be.
Flip it, right? Since we're talking about 2021 by the moment, let's go back to the period we're supposed to be doing this podcast on, okay? Right, any pro at that time, okay, since we're talking about 90s and noughties, ask them, would they rather win the League Cup or the FA Cup? My guess would be the FA Cup. I might be completely wrong.
I'm with you on
ask
that.
Them, yeah.
I agree.
Which trophy would they rather win? But if you want to go further on and talk about this day and age, I would still say ask any pro playing this day and age, what trophy would you win? You have to pick one, the League Cup or the FA Cup. I still think they'd pick the FA Cup.
But do you not think they pick the FA Cup based on the fact that it's the FA Cup, not on the...
Either way, the question is, what trophy, if you had to win one of those, the League Cup or the FA Cup, which one would you rather win as a player? I might be completely wrong, Paul. It's just my opinion. Yeah. What one would you rather win? I still think they'd pick the FA Cup, mate.
I agree. I don't.
What about you, Dave and Miller?
I think Mickey's getting... I love to disagree with Mickey. It's my favourite thing in the world to do. But what he was trying to say is that the finishing fourth is more important now because what comes with it than winning the FA Cup.
That's not the question I asked, mate.
No, but that's what Paul was saying to you.
Yeah, but the question I asked, he's on about...
He flipped it.
The demise of the FA Cup. The question I asked was...
What cup would they rather win? I agree. I agree. The FA Cup wins all day long. All day, every day.
So, as a fan, there you go. As a fan, I'm going to flip it on you, Graham. As a fan, would you rather Fulham win the League Cup or the FA Cup?
They both get you into Europe, so the FA Cup.
FA Cup, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't disagree with that in the slightest, but I'm gonna flip the flip that you flip that Miller flipped. If you say to a player now, you play in the Champions League for a season or you win the FA Cup, what are the players saying?
It's Champions League, obviously, yeah. But you were talking about the League Cup and the FA Cup. Now you've found the Champions League as well.
Yeah, no, because I'm saying...
That's the ultimate, isn't it? So that's going to be the priority, yeah.
But that's I totally agree. That's why the FA Cup is devalued. Is because in the 90s and early noughties, the Champions League was the first one or two teams, and finishing fourth or third, and even second, wasn't a thing. But since it's become a fourth place trophy, which I think Wenger's created in some respect, no, I'm not having to dig at Arsenal at all, but it was Arsenal's point was get fourth, and that was our number one. And they won a fair few FA Cups on the road to it, but their priority.
Fair few won the most.
Yeah, you have won the most. But
yeah, thank you. Yeah, don't leave that bit out.
Yeah, but that's. Okay, well, I wasn't going to, but go on. But I think again, I'll tell you what, we're going to do an FA Cup special. So, and this can all come back into that when Harper's around, as I'm sure I have some great insight to give us on that as well.
He probably played in it the way he was talking the other day.
Yeah, I think a championship playoffs. We didn't mention much of that on the last season. Madcap playoffs of the 90s, and that was more 90s, where it had some absolutely fantastic finals in that. And there was some.
I only remember one, to be honest, Paul, the old Charlton Sunderland. That's the only one I can remember off the top of my head.
What was the show? Mendonca,
yeah, yeah. Mendonca, Michael Gray missed the pen, didn't he? That's, I think that's the one that sticks in everyone's memory.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is obviously the key one when you're thinking about the playoff results in the 90s. But then you also had. Kenny Dalglish at Blackburn took them up with a 1-0 win over Leicester in 92. You had 2 years in a row of 4-3. Swindon beat Leicester 4-3. Then the following, two seasons after, Bolton beat Reading 4-3. Obviously, the 4-4, you had that. It was just, it was a fantastic competition, not a competition, but it was a fantastic, and that was something that was really looked forward to at the end of the season, was the playoff finals. I know it is now, but now it's all about the money. Of course, you want to get in the Premier League, in the top league, but it's all now focused. The headlines aren't so-and-so reaching the Premier League. The headlines are the 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 pound jackpot of the championship in that period, which I thought was very
interesting. Yeah, sorry, Paul, to butt in. You're 100% right. You know, the weird thing, correct me if I'm wrong, I remember Fulham, obviously being a Fulham supporter, they won the first division playoffs last year against Brentford. And they earned more money than the team that won the Champions League the same season, money wise. That's so the ultimate trophy in European football, prize money was less than the second division in English tier football winners that finished fifth, sixth.
Well, that's why I think they're trying to reach.
Yeah, I know, it's confusing, isn't it? Imagine explaining that to an alien. not an alien, but you know, somebody doesn't understand football.
Is there anything else we missed in the 90s or early 2000s? The voices of football. Does anyone miss them?
I do. You see, when you put your snippets into our podcast, when we put all the snippets into the goals, and Andy Gray, I don't care what anyone, whether you like him or not, he was brilliant on Sky, and he's missed. Like Martin Tyler, he was decent as well. But Keys and Gray, they made Sky. They're a bit of dirty bastards, which is what allegedly we're doing that again. But you know, which is why they got kicked off. But now they, for me, they still are. You hear them even now and they sound great.
Yeah, no, I totally agree what Dave said. It's the 90s as well, wasn't it? Well, going into 2000, Scottish accent as well. So Dave's a bit biased, but no, he's totally right. This goes with the Premier League football from the start, doesn't it? Keys and Gray, especially Andy Gray. I mean, his commentary is fantastic. And what he got, it's a bit like the Hoddle thing, isn't it? For what they got sacked for was nothing to do with what they were good at. You know, yeah, it's unfortunate. They shouldn't have said what they said or did what they said. But unfortunately, yeah, they are missed. I must agree. I agree. Dave's right. They are missed.
Sorry, Miller, you're wincing a bit there in terms of the old Keys and Gray.
Needed a revamp for me. They're classic. They're legends, as you guys said, but it did need a revamp. So I like the balance now with players that started in the Premier League and now they're talking about the Premier League. Andy Gray never played in the Premier League. So I like the Neville Carragher combo and the other pundits that come into it. Don't get me wrong, as you guys said, legends, that they basically made Sky Sports what it is. Monday Night Football was blinding with Andy Gray and that, but it needed a revamp.
Okay, revamp for Miller there. I think I agree. I think what you're saying there, I think it's taken a long time to get to where we are in the last couple of years. And Micah Richardson's brilliant. I think he's really made a massive difference to Sky personally. You know, because I think it was getting a bit stale again, but I think he's really getting an injection of energy to the show. But I think we'll leave it there. And obviously, we've got loads of episodes coming up.
The weekly quiz. I've done this week because we're going into the 2000s. I've mixed it up from 92 up to 2009. Some of these players did play in the 2010s, but they were at these clubs in the 2000s and 90s. So, no particular order. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, right. Let's start with Dave and I go to Miller and I go to Paul. Okay, Dave, you ready?
No, but go on.
Nottingham Forest, Scottish midfielder.
Scott Gemmell.
Well done. Scott Gemmell. Yeah. Gosh. Miller, Southampton, Welsh striker.
Ian Saunders.
Mark Hughes.
Mark Hughes. Mm. Paul.
Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday, English goalkeeper.
Kevin Pressman.
Incorrect. Dave. Everton, English defender.
Alan Stubbs.
David Unsworth. Man City, Bermudan striker.
No idea.
What?
No idea.
Well, guess.
The goat.
Sean Goater. Well done. Sean Goater.
Yeah.
I don't know how I got that one.
The only one it could have been.
Exactly, Bermudan. But Paul, Middlesbrough, Cameroonian midfielder.
Scott Gemmell. Scott Gemmell, sorry. Jeremy.
Not nearly. Oh. Joseph Desiree Job. Dave, Everton, Nigerian defender.
Joseph Yobo.
Ledge.
Well done. Joseph Yobo, yeah. Miller. Birmingham Finnish striker.
Forsell.
Well done. Mikel Forsell.
That's decent.
I know all of yours, but none of mine. This is ridiculous.
Right, Paul. Man City Chinese defender.
Fan Zedong.
No. Sun Ji Hai.
What was that answer you said, Paul?
Fan Zedong is from Borough.
I was going to say, is that politically correct? Did you make that one up?
Oh, yes. Dave, Newcastle Congolese striker. Yeah, Dave Holland. Newcastle Congolese striker.
Oh, God, I can see him.
You got the answer quick.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to let it go.
No, anyone else?
Luar.
Well done, lads. Luar.
Hold on.
Miller, Portsmouth Zimbabwean striker. Tick-tock.
No.
No, lads?
No. Benjani.
Well done, Dave.
Benjani, yeah.
Benjani. Paul, Fulham French midfielder.
Here he goes.
Tick-tock. You got answer quick, son. You've had longer than these two.
I can't think of M. Does it?
No. Anyone?
Steve Malbronk.
Yes.
No. I thought Malbronk.
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
Silvan Legwinski.
Ah, good one.
Then we're going to the noughties here, so it's a bit harder. Right, Dave. Liverpool, Danish midfielder.
Nah.
No? Anyone else? Nah. Miller? No? Jan Mulvey.
And that's 90s as well.
Yeah. Well, I did ask in the WhatsApp group. He said have a mix. So 90s and noughties. Yeah. Miller, Southampton, Dutch defender.
And Pike.
Ken
Moncal.
Legend.
Paul?
Yeah. Nice. He'd be 80 now if he were playing then.
Probably, yeah. He played well into the late 90s, Dave.
Ooh,
Paul
Van Dyke.
No, Van Dyke. Paul, Wimbledon, Irish defender.
Kenny Cunningham.
Well done. Kenny Cunningham, yeah. Dave, Newcastle, English midfielder.
Rob Lee.
Really? Oh. Lee Clark. Miller, Crystal Palace, English goalkeeper.
Nigel Martin.
Well done, Nigel Martin, yes.
That's nice.
What's the score, Graham?
I've no idea. You have to do it with the
3-2-1.
Paul, Portsmouth, Bulgarian striker.
Todorov.
I'm going to give you that. Todorov,
yeah.
Dave, Man United, Angolan striker.
Say what?
Man United, Angolan striker. Now, Angolan's a bit of a giveaway because I don't think there are many Angolan strikers.
The White York.
Angolan?
Oh, no, he was Trinidad and Tobago, wasn't he? Shit. I don't know. No.
No? Anyone else?
Mancino?
Manucho,
yeah.
Lampo, Manucho, yeah. Miller? Newcastle, Nigerian striker.
Martins.
Well done. Obafemi Martins.
Nice.
Yeah. Paul. Man City, Belgian defender.
I'm going to say Kompany, but I think it's too... Yeah, can't go Kompany.
Yeah, times when that's too obvious, isn't it? Yeah, it is. It's too obvious. Daniel Van Buyten.
Ah, nice.
Dave, Leeds, Scottish midfielder.
Gary McAllister.
Well done. Gary. Could give you an easy one, could I?
Give me more of them if you want.
Miller, Chelsea, Scottish defender.
Steve Clark.
Well done, Steve Clark.
What's the score, Miller?
5 to me, 3 to Holland, 2 to you.
Gave it up. Paul, English, Arsenal striker.
I know. Ian Wright is obviously the obvious one, but I don't know if you've gone obvious. It's a difficult one. because you could have gone Kev Campbell. I'm going to go Kevin Campbell. Oh!
Smudger Smith. Dave, West Ham, Northern Irish midfielder.
Nah.
Steve Longmaz.
No, Miller. Michael Hughes. Michael Hughes. Miller, Aston Villa, Irish defender.
Paul McGrath.
Nearly. I did him previously. Steve Staunton. Getting close to the end now. Paul, Blackburn, Australian defender.
Australian, Lucas Neal.
Well done, yeah. Lucas Neal. Well done.
Play his first answer.
Dave, Wigan, Honduran midfielder.
Figueroa.
Palacios. No. Wilson Palacios.
Well done, Paul. Wilson Palacios, yeah. Miller, Man United, Argentinian defender.
Heinze.
Yes, Gabriel Heinze. Well done, yeah. Yes, and the last one is Paul, Arsenal, Belarusian midfielder.
Kleb. Kleb.
Yes, well, Alexander Kleb. That's it. Well done. That's all of them. The last 10 was for Lee.
6 to me, 4 to Paul, 3 to Holland.
Should we do 10 more?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, come on.
So you've got the last 10. You've done better than what I thought you lot. Well done. I thought it'd be quite hard. Right, so I'll start with Dave, so I'll continue with Dave. Dave, West Brom, Hungarian midfielder.
What?
Goethe.
Premier League, noughties.
It was, yeah. He doesn't know. It's Goethe. Is that his name?
It's close. No, Dave, no? Anyone else? Paul was closer.
No.
No?
That's what I meant, Gira, well, yeah. I was trying to say.
Tangira, yeah.
I knew I couldn't pronounce it, but yeah.
Nice.
Miller, Chelsea, Peruvian striker.
Pizarro.
Well done, Paul. Yes, it is. Claudio Pizarro.
Wow, Paul.
Yeah.
I just see him look down and a light flashed.
And he's put his hands in front of him then.
My hands were like that. What are you talking about?
You look down. What do you look down at?
Hey, you said it, not me. Right, Paul, it's your go. Wigan, Colombian striker.
Wigan. Figueroa.
I hate when close. He does that.
Close. He's close.
I've got to get it. I can't pronounce
it. He's close. Anyone else?
Oh.
Hugo Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave, Tottenham, Norwegian goalkeeper.
Nielsen.
No. Erik Torsvedt. Remember him? Blackburn, Scottish striker.
No, blank. And. Oh, no.
Kevin Gallagher.
He stole it from nice. Him. Nice. Yeah, he stole it from you. It was Gallagher.
I wouldn't have got that.
Paul? Chelsea, Serbian striker.
I know this one. Come to me. If he does what he does, I know he's going to do it.
Kesman?
No, yes, it was Mateo Kesman. Well done, mate. Dave, Blackburn, Paraguayan striker.
Roque Santa Cruz.
Well done, mate. Roque Santa nice. Cruz, yeah. Miller, Man City, Brazilian striker.
Rubinho.
Elano. Oh, Joe.
Oh.
Joe. Oh. Last two left. Paul, Man City, Irish striker.
No idea.
Niall Quinn.
Anyone else? Well done, Dave. Niall Quinn.
Nice. Miller, what's the scores?
No idea.
6-5-4. Same order. Me, you, Holland.
Fulham, Argentinian striker.
No, don't
know. Silva. Is that his name? Saliva. Saliva.
Savala. Close. Miller, no?
He wore the mask.
Yeah, that's the one. Sava.
Get in. 6-6-5. Miller, it's on, motherfucker.
Oh, he's stealing points. No.
It's not yours.
I didn't realise he was stealing points.
Oh, I thought he was stealing points.
No.
Oh, forget this shit game then.
If we were stealing points, you would have won this long time ago.
Right, there's two left then. Miller, Everton, South African midfielder.
Everton suffer. Stephen Pienaar, is it?
Stephen Pienaar, well done. So that leaves Paul, Coventry, American striker.
Max Moon, Max.
Are you on about Joe Max Moore?
Yeah, Joe Max Moore.
No, not Coventry.
Oh, obviously. Oh, sorry. I thought you said. Okay.
Regularly. No idea what the scores are. So.
That's I enjoyed a lot, that. Miller, well done, son. That was a good victory there. I think next week we have to start introducing steals into this because I should have won that by about 9 points. Well, that's fine. Well, I enjoyed that. Okay, guys, thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Have a good week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.